Hello, welcome. This is Joe Shirey. We're here at TechEd, and today we have Matt Hessinger with us. And Matt, welcome. Matt, why don't you tell us what you're doing here at TechEd?
Well, other than having an absolute blast, loving LA, the weather's been great. Got a couple things I've been doing. Mm-hmm. This year, I'm the Architecture Track's external advisor.
Wow.
So that meant I had to review all the decks prior and make sure everybody had good content. And so far, the score's coming in, and life looks good. So that was one thing. And second is I'm actually giving, did a pre-con talk and did a session on architecture and business analysis yesterday.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. What company do you work for and your experience?
I'm an independent consultant. I've been independent for about 6 years now.
Wow.
Prior to that, I helped build and run several small partners to Microsoft consultancies. And so I do, for the most part now, architecture consulting, so early project lifecycle work, requirements analysis, business strategy, through to design and mentoring developers and designers, and once in a while I actually get to write code too, so that's kind of fun.
Fantastic. That sounds like a really fun role.
Yes, it is.
So you mentioned you were presenting a session here. Tell us a little bit about your session that you were presenting.
You got it. Well, and one thing I'll comment on is for the whole architecture track, which is a little bit different at an event like TechEd, where there's a lot more code focus, a lot more product focus. We talked as a team, and we still wanted to give the attendees, especially in this economy, something that they could take away. So that was something that was a theme through all of our talks. So my session was how architects should align more with the work of business analysts.
Business analysts,
and yes. The process of business analysis.
Right.
So if you look at some of the value that businesses are looking for, starts with business strategy, it starts with the things that they need to get accomplished, and so the more that architects can be aware of the things they can offer to the business side,
right,
the better chance they have that the technical side will get built right, it'll be the right thing, and it'll actually get adopted. So it's just an important theme that I think all people in technology, people who live even way down in the code, could be more aware of, and will give them a better chance to show their value to the businesses they work for.
Excellent. I've noticed at TechEd that a lot of technology tracks happen, and sometimes sitting back and really understanding how to apply those technologies is something that a lot of people could use better information about or better strategies for doing that. It's interesting because I know both of you and I have been sitting in the architecture Ask the Experts area, and the types of conversations that have happened there have not been around technology as much as they have been around. I've been an anointed architect on my team, or I want to become an architect, and it's really interesting because that business alignment, that business requirements, business strategy has become a big part of that. Tell me, what kind of strategies do you think are really effective for aspiring architects or people that have been really good engineers for becoming better aligned with the business?
Well, one thing that I think is important is if you look at, for example, non-functional requirements. Mm-hmm. These are the things that technologists usually first see, or the first kinds of requirements that they're made aware of. Things like performance, scalability, security, usability, accessibility, data privacy, etc. That's an area where, rather than just sitting back and doing what you're told, rather than just building something and then hoping that it's going to work, actually get out there and do some research, build or at least gather your own list of requirements from many sources that are out there, and use those in the conversations with the business stakeholders, whether it's analysts or even designers, and make sure they're thinking about these things.
Right.
So one example that I used in my session was a paper put out by some folks at the Software Engineering Institute at Carnegie Mellon, and it was titled Achieving Usability Through Software Architecture. But if all you read was the table of contents, you would get 35 requirements for usability, and I would hazard a guess that applications and I know applications I've built missed probably a good 30 of them.
Right.
So there are some of the simple ones like undo, redo.
Right.
You know, that's a pretty standard one. But one that you might not consider is canceling long-running transactions. So if somebody clicks a button and it's going to be 5 minutes, they might want to do something else. And that takes some engineering,
right?
But even defining that as a requirement is important. Putting that in front of the business stakeholders and saying, this is a requirement we believe is important. There is going to be a cost,
right?
And then weighing that just like you do any other requirements that would be more functional.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect. That's one potential way to look at it. Another way would be to look internally. So look inside your organization. For example, infrastructure organizations typically have SLAs.
Right.
They've got infrastructure performance metrics. They have guidelines for what you would expect once you deploy an application. So those are just all sorts of things you can look at. And that's just in non-functional requirements.
Right.
There's other things that I talk about in my session about frameworks, whether it's search or business rules engines, platforms,
right.
You know, like SharePoint, where now it's not even the technology people that are doing all the solution building, it's the actual users themselves. So these are lots of things where you as a technology practitioner can get more aware of the requirements and be the communicator of those requirements and
right.
be the advocate for doing the right things and also be part of the analysis and trade-off and prioritization discussion.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense. It's really interesting because in a lot of cases when I see some of these projects happen, the technology folks are kind of waiting for the business to tell them what to do, and rather than being proactive about how to bring some value to the business and start to put it in business terms. You talked a lot about the non-functional requirements, and it's really interesting that you'll see people say, I need 5 nines of availability, but they cannot put that into the terms of why that's important to the
right.
business. And when you go to somebody who's writing the check and trying to say, I need 5 nines, which translates into all of these servers that need to sit out here, there's a communication mismatch there that the CFO really doesn't understand. Why are we buying all these boxes? Because you can't put it in financial terms or in business terms. So when you think through that whole requirements process and the business analysis process, are there areas where the architect really shouldn't play, where the architect should be kind of let other people take the lead?
Well, I think that's actually a good question, because you could tend to try to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you could tend to try to get yourself involved in all of the areas. The fact is, you're not going to have the business domain expertise.
Right.
So I think in all areas. I mean, you might have been in a particular vertical industry for a long period of time. I myself tend to touch pharmaceuticals one day, and it's retail the next year, and then it's consumer products, and then it's aerospace, you know, some crazy broad range of things. There's no way I can tell an engineer in a manufacturing company the exact requirements for the solution that they need.
Right.
What I can do is, as they put those requirements together, I can help them identify existing products that might meet that need. I can help them identify maybe frameworks that we can build on. I can help them determine some of the important non-functional requirements and how they might affect them. It boils down to, I can help them understand the things that they don't know.
Right.
Because there are things that they know
right.
And that they're going to communicate. But then there's the things that they don't know. Because I'm in software, they're in that particular industry domain, and those two things can mix together. So I think that's kind of a general statement that you don't want to try to take ownership of every aspect. But I will say, having some involvement not only in the requirements themselves and having some involvement in how those requirements are gathered, collected, organized, used downstream, that's another area. Certainly you'll see some things at TechEd this week around Visual Studio Team System,
right.
Some of the new things they're doing in the way they're organizing work items and adding new work item types. They're starting to bring the VSTS infrastructure to a point where it's not just bugs,
right.
It's not just developer activities, it's things you could consider requirements,
right.
Features, and then start to build that traceability. So that's an area where, again, I probably can't determine how the business analysis organization will run the requirements,
mm-hmm.
but I can bring some things to their attention that I'm already using
right.
in my development organization that might offer benefits to them and the whole life cycle of the project.
No, that totally makes sense. So if I'm becoming or desire to become an architect, and I'm thinking of through that process, and I want to incorporate some strategies, where would you go look? Where might be some things that you might start to help foster and build some of these skill sets that'll help along the development lifecycle process?
So the first it closer to our industry or some of the industry organizations. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we'll even go tighter. So
right.
if you're someone who builds on the Microsoft platform and you're aware of some of the different things that Microsoft does, the Microsoft Certified Architecture Program has done a very good job of defining a set of competencies that encompass what an architect should be.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, only two of them touch technology.
Correct.
The other five of them are much more centered on the business side of things and in the interpersonal skills. So even if you don't think you're ready to go through the MCA program, even if you know that's something 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road to aspire for, just looking at those competencies can show you, here's some places that I can fill in the gaps. Then if you go a little bit further, go to ISA, go to the Open Group, similarly, they not only have a richer set of assets that are available to you, they've got additional communities that you can connect to in terms of the learning some of these skills.
Right.
There's one organization even outside of the architecture realm, and that's the International Institute of Business Analysts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is centered around the business analysis practice. They've created and just released the 2.0 version of their Business Analyst Book of Knowledge,
mm-hmm.
which, again, you may not want to be a business analyst, but I can guarantee you'll find some things in that book that are tactically usable right now, whether it's techniques for requirement solicitation, whether it's feature prioritization matrices, ways that you can think about analyzing requirements, how to measure, how to manage that process. These are all great things
right.
To learn from. So those are just some organizational and tactical assets, and then the spider web of references that comes from that.
Absolutely.
That I think are good places to start.
Fantastic. You brought up a couple of them and that I find really interesting. The Microsoft Certified Architect program's kind of got some interesting aspects to it in terms of people that want to develop those skills, and it really puts a framework around a definition of architect. It may not be the architect that you want to be, but it's got some things that I think anybody who wants to be an architecture should really take a look at. And the other thing you brought up was some of the community organizations, and I'm personally a big advocate of that. Number one, I think if you're going to be an architect or want to be an architect, networking with some of your peers and getting to know other people in your community and learning some of the struggles and some of the successes that they've gone through can really help you be more successful in your day-to-day. And a lot of people I know who have come out of development and engineering who want to aspire to that, it's good to start to find role models and mentors in those types of programs that can bring them along and help them out. So tell me a little bit, how did you develop some of these skills over time? What are some of the things that you thought were most successful in helping you kind of get to where you are today?
So I think the first, I've been somewhat fortunate to have the opportunity to catch the organizations that I was with early in my career were also early in my case, the internet wave, so mm-hmm. in the early to mid-90s. So I had the opportunity, being the old guard, 25-year-old, when they're bringing in all the fresh faces out of college, to be almost forced to think about the business along with the technology.
Right.
In fact, where the web, from my career, where I got started was in media and entertainment, the advertising world, and there was a highly consultative discussion there. It was about things other than just bits and bytes. It was your brand, and it was how your customers think, and what you want to bring to market. Suddenly, it's not just about writing code and making things compile. So I think that was one thing.
You're right.
And then having the opportunity to present, being forced to present,
mm-hmm.
and being forced to communicate and write. I can draw on pretty good core communication skills, writing, speaking, etc. Those are, I think, fundamentals that you can always work on and are always valuable. And then beyond that, I just have a drive to think about business, like think about creating a business, think about solving problems, and not just assume that's within the context of some big company that I work in.
Right.
So being an independent consultant is not for everybody.
Yes.
But it for me works very well because I have to exercise those skills nearly every day.
Right.
And that's not just the fun strategic stuff, but it's the operational side of things, financial management, mm-hmm. business development, networking. So they seem like these things that the guys in the suits always do, but the fact is, the guys in the suits probably making pretty good salaries, and there's probably a reason for that. So it's not that you have to aspire to give up your technical skills.
Right.
It's not that you give up working with technologists and being interested in technology, but the fact is the need, the strategy, the requirements tends to flow downhill to the people trying to meet those needs. So the more you can push yourself up that hill, the better off you are.
I absolutely agree. So one other question that has come up a lot while I've sat in the architecture booth, as we've talked to folks who want to become better architects and realize that they need to build those non-technical skills, is the concern that if I build those skills, that my technical skills are going to atrophy. And what do I really need to know? Where do I need to be from a technologist's perspective and still be an effective architect? And I'm kind of curious your opinion on that, of where you think people need to be on that spectrum to be effective in both areas.
Well, I don't think there's any hard, fast answer. It's a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that makes me less concerned about it, so if I was to, say, put myself back in the mode where I was interviewing and hiring individuals. And in fact, even when I consult, I tend to help mentor the organizations I'm with, bring in the right people, because I want the best people on the team that I'm working with, even if they're their employees or contractors. But it's more about how you solve the problem than it is knowing how the problem that you know about is solved.
And right.
That sounds a little bit confusing, but these days we have so much more resources at our fingertips. I'll be honest, Joe, you and I have been doing this a long time.
Absolutely.
MSDN has always been great, but right now, the F1 help and IntelliSense and then at higher levels with software factories and patterns and the stuff that Patterns and Practices doing with enterprise libraries, there's a lot more at our disposal. And in fact, Microsoft and other technology organizations are investing heavily in that. So I'm not as worried about losing skills. I'm more worried about the skills that help me learn about new things.
Right.
And so I think it's not as much of a concern for me as long as you're willing to invest that time when you have to go deep again.
I agree 100%. I've always kind of said that it's kind of interesting that things will change, but they still remain the same in a lot of ways. A lot of the patterns, a lot of the techniques that we've always used as developers and as architects, they remain the same even though you're using different technologies. So I always tell people it's probably not as big of a challenge as you would expect, and if you can align with the business and become a better advocate of the business needs, that you're going to be more valuable to your organization. So I thank you for your time today. Have a great time here at TechEd, and we'll see you here soon.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe.
Take care.